Thank you and good afternoon. I'd like to also acknowledge my co-authors, Yam and Sattar from IFDC Bangladesh, and Rick, Joaquin and Wendy from IFDC headquarters. I'll try to follow up this protocol. A very quick background on the focus of this research. As far as nitrogen fertilization goes, urea is one of the most commonly used nitrogen fertilizer. We consume about 59 million tons of urea, and if you look at the carbon dioxide equivalent emissions associated with the production and application of urea, as you can see, apart from the production where CO2 footprint is left, also during application there is CO2 emission when during the urea hydrolysis process. So the combined emission is about 165 million tons on a global basis for urea use. And if you look at, on the other hand, if you use the IPCC estimates, N2O alone could account for 81.5 million. And you can look at the similar numbers for Bangladesh, and this is where my results are coming from the field studies conducted in Bangladesh. This graph has already been discussed in an earlier presentation. I will only highlight that main thing we're trying to show is that both during the nitrification and denitrification process, nitrous oxide and nitric oxide is produced. And then the environmental concern and hazards involved with nitrous oxide and nitric oxide, global warming, and then the stratospheric ozone depletion. As we've had earlier, it is the number one ozone depletion element now. In this study, we are trying to look at what happens when you subsurface apply urea in a flooded field. And as I mentioned, nitrous oxide and nitric oxide emission occurs under both during nitrification and denitrification. So the subsurface application of urea or displacement of urea briquette takes place at about 10 centimeter depth. So it is placed in the reduced soil zone where the chances for nitrification and hence denitrification is substantially reduced. And so we wanted to test that hypothesis in this study, that apart from the benefits from subsurface application of urea, such as increased grain yield of up to 20%, 30% urea savings, and increased nitrogen use recoveries, we wanted to test the hypothesis that the subsurface application would also result in reduction in nitrous oxide and nitric oxide. As I mentioned, these trials were conducted in Bangladesh, and the two locations were Bangladesh Agricultural University and Bangladesh Rice Research Institution. I'm going to focus on the one side, Bangladesh Agricultural University, and at each side we had two experiments, a continuously standing water or completely flooded system, and the alternate wetting and drying. And again, in this presentation, my focus will be on completely flooded system, and there were measurements done on grain yield, nitrogen use efficiency, ammonium nitrogen and ammonia volatilization. But the focus this afternoon will be looking at nitrous oxide and nitric oxide emission. This is showing the placement of the chambers in the field. There's a base already inserted. This is a typical environment, the temperature and rainfall conditions at the BAU site. As far as the treatments that were imposed, there were 8 treatments. Only 3 of these treatments had chambers placed, the check or the control, the urea that was deplaced or subsurface applied, and the prill urea that was broadcast applied. The continuously flooded experiments were also randomized with 3 replications. This is a quick look at setup in the chambers. the measurements was done using Teledyne API T320U gas filter correlation analyzer for N2O and T200 chemiluminescence analyzer for NO and NO2. We used the closed chamber automated chamber technique with automated gas sampling, online gas analysis, and then controlled by a data logging unit. This diagram gives you a number of samples we took. Samples were taken 6 times. Actually, they were, first of all, every replication, each replicated was sampled every 3 hours, and within each rep, the gas sampling from each of those chambers was done 6 times, first with a open chamber, and then 5 additional reading with the closed chambers. So we're looking at about 3,000 emission rate measurement from each of those chambers. The models used, we used linear, exponential, and Hutchinson's Moisier model to determine the emission rates. Quickly looking at the emissions that took place using the linear model, and this is for the Amman season, is the main wet season in Bangladesh. A couple of things, quickly look, you can see that broadcast application has peaks that you don't see with the displacement or control. The arrows point out planting and the top dressing applications or displacement. So associated with displacement, we don't really see any major emissions. 5 to 10 days after urea top dressing, we're beginning to see emissions in the broadcast applicated treatments. We see similar results with the exponential models, not much change. Again, we are able to pick the observe the peaks associated with the fertilizer applications. No such peaks appear. Of course, there is no nitrogen application there. But with the displacement, we again do not see any peaks, and from just observations, you can see there is very little difference between the subsurface applied urea and the zero check plot. This is the Hutchinson model. We observe a lot more emissions using this model, but overall we still see the peaks associated with the fertilizer applications. In terms of cumulative emissions that we get from the wet season, emissions are very low in rice fields. This is continuously flooded rice fields, so we're not seeing the numbers that you earlier saw from upland crops. So the emission for the whole season, as you can see, is ranging from about 90 grams per hectare. There's definitely a significant increase in emission with broadcast application compared to no application or surface subsurface applied. Independent of which model we used, we are able to pick up those differences. So these bars with error bar are for the continuously flooded system. I mentioned I was not going to discuss the alternate wetting and drying. The main reason is this was not a replicated experiment, but we still see the similar trends that we're getting higher emissions from broadcast applied urea plots with alternate wetting and drying. One thing to remember, the wet season is not a very good season to do alternate wetting and drying because the field remains wet most of the time. When we look at other seasons, the borrow season is the dry season, so rice is irrigated here. We see similar trends from the past, highly significant increases in emissions and much lower with the displacement of urea for the dry season, and the oats is the short wet season crop. So the magnitude of emission is much higher in the dry season compared to the to the wet season, and both the wet seasons, the previous one is a show, sorry, for the main wet season, we're getting about 75 to 90 grams per hectare, and for the short wet season, we're getting about 110, 150 or so, but much higher with the dry season crop. In addition to the fertilizer application peaks that we saw in the wet season, here in the alternate wetting and drying cycle, when we did the drying, which is shown by the blue shades, you see there are some peaks that are associated with the drying cycles as well. So we are able to make observations in terms of increased emissions, and most of the time the emissions are occurring in the broadcast applied or field urea plots. As far as nitric oxide is concerned, first of all, the emissions were very, very low. You don't get much nitric oxide emission under flooded condition. And the amounts, as you can see, were almost, there were no difference between the background or the check emissions and with the fertilizer application. Although with alternate wetting drying, we are seeing some differences. The other thing is, at the other side, we are seeing somewhat different results, but as I mentioned, the alternate wetting drying experiment was unreplicated, so you expect differences. In conclusion, N2O emissions were sporadic and event-specific. The models that we use, whether we use linear, exponential, or Hutchinson's-Moisier model, they were able to identify these events whenever the peaks occurred. Significant N2O peaks were observed after each broadcast application of urea. The peaks were rarely observed after the subsurface application or the displacement of urea. So one of the conclusions is that the displacement of subsurface applied urea did reduce emissions in the continuously flooded fields. Emissions were higher during the dry season. As mentioned, the NO emissions were negligible. And when we look at the total CO2 equivalent emissions from the urea displacement plots, where we are having urea saving, we're getting less emissions and also higher yields, we do have a total reduction in CO2 emissions. Thank you.
Time for one or two questions.
You got lower emissions in UDP versus the urea, but the rate was lower. So was the proportion of standardizing for the rate, was it still lower?
Good question. The rates were made, recommended rates for urea and UDP. As you saw, there was 78 for pre-urea and 52 or something for. But inside the chamber, because the displacement is not a uniform application, so to correct that bias, actually we took a more conservative approach. All the displaced urea was inside the chamber. So if you do really want to correct for that, you end up overcompensating and end up with a much higher rate of nitrogen in that small area where the chambers were placed. But that's a good point. Thanks, David.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you.